This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 147, Selfies for Safety. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful Friday with another exciting, fantastical episode of Games at Work with my buddy Michael Martin.
Yay!
Hi, Michael.
And then they ate Robin's Minstrels.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. One of the games I've been playing is I'm using the handle of Brave Sir Robin.
Did you run away?
Sometimes I do.
Okay.
But not often. I'm usually a very brave warrior who goes and takes care of the evil monsters.
Cool. Well, so we had a slew of links this week, and we narrowed them down, whittled them down, jumped
really
them
panning
out.
For gold.
Panning for the nuggets of nuggetnessness. And we're going to start off with a wonderful new tool that Uber put out on, or is planning on putting out, I guess, to increase rider safety with selfies.
Yeah, well, it was announced today, apparently, and
today.
The article
1 hour ago
came out was an hour ago, but it was announced today. So the whole idea is, you want to have the person who is your Uber car driver actually be the person who is registered with Uber. So the business problem we're trying to solve here is that if somebody were to snag a driver's account and then drive on their account, but we're not actually that person, that could be problematic. So to avoid that circumstance, Uber is turning to selfies. So the driver can do a selfie check-in, and that will be validated by a Microsoft Cognitive Service to make sure that the driver's identity matches the driver on record, and then off they go taking Lyfts around town.
Lyfts or Ubers? So I have to ask this question. Are you a Uber fan? Do you use Uber when you're traveling?
Well, Uber would know that, wouldn't they? No, I do. Sometimes I do. I wouldn't say all the time. There are aspects of it that I just love because I can tell when the car is coming, what kind of car it is, and I will have more information about it. So I like that. But I am not a constant Uber driver or rider, I should say.
Yeah,
what about you?
To be honest, I've done it once. And actually, I was in San Francisco, and I met up with my brother who happened to be in San Francisco at the same time, and he's an Uber fanatic, and we had gone to this really nice restaurant and had way too much to eat, and then we were going to go to this bar that was down at the wharf, and so we grabbed an Uber. Mm-hmm. And it was cool. It worked. It was so funny because the driver had Uber credentials, Lyft credentials, and a fairly new car and everything. He goes, "Yeah, I'm driving all the driving carriers, and whichever one comes first is the one I deal with." And I'm sitting there thinking, "Well, that's cool." However, I've been overseas where I could use Uber, and I just haven't done it. I've been in the city in New York. And, you know, yellow cabs are everywhere, and it's all for work anyway, and work will pay either Uber or a cab fee, but the cab just seems like it's more, God, I'm getting old. Reliable's not the right term, but it just works. And I know I'm not going to have any issues.
More familiar?
It's definitely not more comfortable. But it just seems like it's, I tend to adopt technology very quickly, as you know. But for some reason, that business model change just hasn't resonated with me yet.
Hmm. Okay.
And so I was, you know, I'd love to hear from our listeners because we have a wide range of ages and locations with our listeners. I'd love to get their perspective on this.
Yeah, it would be. I found that it was interesting to see how selfies are being used in this way. And it, to me, it's a little bit more of another level of identity verification that is a human factor, easy to handle element, and also one that really requires the person to more personally authenticate themselves. And what's more personal than a nice selfie, right?
Yeah, or something like that.
Something like that. All right. Well, let's keep on trucking because there's all kinds of good stuff here today for us to talk about.
And, you know, when you're trucking, you know, you're probably taking a ride on that Uber. And, you know, if she's with you, she might have a ticket to ride. And if she has a ticket to ride and she don't care, you might be listening to the Beatles. I'm making that. You know, this is called professional. Right, it's a segue. It's a professional segue. And so you're listening to the Beatles, and if you're listening to the Beatles, it might be a new Beatles song, or at least a Beatles-inspired song written entirely by an AI. And so we found this link today. I think this one came out about a day ago. And given that there's only two Beatles left, Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr,
there's probably not a lot of new songs coming out of those.
Probably not a lot of new songs coming out. You're absolutely right. but the Sony Research Laboratory actually built a song, and they're looking at releasing an entire album of songs all written by AI. And this one's called Daddy's Car, back to the car theme. And it's done entirely in the style of the Beatles. What did you think of it? I was pretty impressed. It really sounded like a Beatles song to me.
It was very Beatlesque, I thought, and aspects of it almost felt like it was too contrived. You know, it's like, okay, here's a little Sergeant Pepper, here's a little bit of this. So, but I would say that having this done completely by an AI is intriguing. And what kind of hit me was, who would you like to have as an AI write more songs? You know, if you were to say, I'd like another song by so-and-so, who would that be, Michael?
How about more songs by the Dead Kennedys? Because, you know, the nuance of the musicality of a good punk rock song.
Yeah, the Ramones would be all right, too. That would be some fun. Or,
well, actually, you know, the Dead Kennedys would be harder than the Ramones because the Ramones were pretty three-chord rock, right? And their songs were vocally and lyrically pretty repetitive and simple. The Dead Kennedys actually had political message and complex lyrics in their songs to some degree. So I think it'd be a little bit harder. It would be a better test to do a Dead Kennedys song. What about Oingo Boingo? A new Oingo Boingo song would rock my world right now.
I could maybe also put in a new Stravinsky?
Yeah, it's easy. There's no lyrics. How many lyrics do you know of Stravinsky songs?
You know, the Firebird was pretty darn good, or Baba Yaga's Hut, you know. There's some all kinds of, you know, Night on Bald Mountain. Those are, you know, pretty incredible things.
Well, they're good,
but you could do something a little extra there. That'd be kind of fun.
To quote Lucy Van Pelt, how famous can, or to paraphrase Lucy Van Pelt, how famous can Stravinsky be? He's never had his picture on bubblegum cards, has he?
Maybe not. All right. So maybe we're going to wind up having more and more of these things, or maybe they'll be AI augmented, right? So you might have a singer, songwriter, composer that's getting a little help from her friends to write the song.
Well, speaking of, you know, that driving song of Daddy's Car, if Daddy's car is a Tesla, he's got to keep his hands on the wheel now.
Yeah,
that's just another professional segue. Thank you very much. Thank you.
A little too easy, but out of order. So I will give you partial marks for this.
Yes, yes.
So many of you probably heard recently how Tesla has got an autonomous driving mode, and
it's not autonomous driving.
Okay,
but it's called autopilot.
It's autopilot, but so it allows for the car to drive itself more so than before, which required a human to do it.
Yes.
right?
Yes.
So when the car is in autopilot mode, and hopefully there it doesn't have double monkey insane autopilot mode, but maybe that's coming later. I don't know. The requirement now is for the driver to have their hands on the wheel.
Well, that's always been the requirement. That has always been the requirement, was you were supposed to have your hands on the wheel, and the car would periodically remind you if you didn't. It would say, supposedly. Hey, you got to have it. Supposedly. You got to have it. And people found ways to circumvent that and ignore it. And so now they're going to force it so you cannot circumvent. And they did this through an over-the-air update recently, which I just think is both cool and scary. You know, you wake up, you got to go to work the next day.
Your car's been upgraded.
Yeah. Welcome. Your car has been upgraded. Do you want Clippy to tell you what happened? And so I think it's really cool. And they're very logical in their process of when they do updates. It's overnight, blah, blah, blah. They don't do it until it pretty much knows it has a time period where it can do the full update.
Right.
But what if you have an emergency during the middle of the night and you need to jump in your car and go somewhere? It's a good engineering problem. But anyway, no, the interesting thing I think on this story is the fact that they've learned if Tesla were a software company, they would probably be Google. Because if you remember early on, everything that Google had was in perpetual beta.
Yes, I remember those statements.
Yes. And so Tesla's autopilot system is right now in perpetual beta, it seems like. And I think they've learned from the driver mistakes and even their own mistakes. Because the other thing they've done is they've changed to where it will not only look at the camera, but it'll also use radar. To see things on the road. I was hearing that part of the story elsewhere on a different podcast this week. And if you remember the one car earlier, I think it was in May, that drove under a truck because it was a white kind of cloudy day and it was a white truck across the road. And so the camera couldn't distinguish between the sky and the truck and then just drove the driver right underneath the car and basically decapitated the car. So they're learning, they're focusing on radar and camera, and then adding this mandatory hands-on wheel, even during autopilot, to kind of drive that safety feature.
Yeah, so I wasn't fully aware of all the nuances of the original autopilot semi-autonomous structure, but it seems to me that this is a wise step to ensure that if you don't have your hands on the car's steering wheel, the car will take you off to the side of the road, slow down, and stop, according to this article, until you come to a park and then re-engage the system. Yep. So it's pretty clever to make sure that that's going to happen that way. Now, incidentally, I did get a chance to have a look at the Model X yesterday up close and personal.
Nice. You riding it?
Oh, didn't drive anywhere, but I got a chance to sit in it.
Yeah.
And the windshield glass when you sit in the car, mm-hmm. You know how windshield goes up to here? Well,
up to
for
here?
The yeah,
or
no,
up
no,
here.
No, up to here.
Oh, okay,
and,
got it.
And when you sit in this car, it doesn't end there, it goes all the way up and over your head. So it is almost like a wraparound piece of glass that becomes part of the roof. And that experience, without having that cross bar, I guess. Where the roof normally would begin for a normal car,
yeah,
is just it's just amazing. It's very amazing.
Cool. Yeah, I've sat in the Model S, mm-hmm. At a couple of conferences where we actually had one in to showcase some work that we were doing, and gorgeous. I wouldn't mind having one. The X does sound really interesting. I haven't seen one up close and personal yet, so I think that's
got goings.
What you're describing does sound really cool.
It's got gull wings.
Well, speaking of seeing forever and cameras, how's that? Pretty good, huh? People are going, well, we don't know what you're transitioning to. How do we know if it's good or not? Well, what we're talking about is some research done at MIT where they've been able to use a special type of scanning that allows you to digitize, in theory, and scan an entire book, all the pages of the book, without opening the book.
And get out of town.
It's pretty cool. Watch the video. If you haven't had a chance or you haven't heard about this, they're able to go down to detecting the air between each page and to use that air as a way of identifying that there's a space between the two pages, and then take and scan the layers as individual pages and then OCR that text into the content of the page.
Yeah, when I first saw this, I was like, whoa, hang on, really? And the answer was,
yeah,
really.
this is just amazing. I mean, you talk about having problems of detecting the difference between the sky and the side of a white truck, right? And then you talk about the resolution that we can do with certain technologies of scanning through things and be able to distinguish it. Now, right now, the technology only goes down to about 9 pages of a closed book, but being able to extend this all the way through, 1,000 pages of a book that's 100 years old, or sorry, 500 years old, is definitely something that can do, which will allow us to digitize so much more of our history and data, which is just fascinating. You remember, gosh, it's been about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. No, it was longer than that. It was 2009. My wife and I spent 2 weeks in the Czech Republic doing a tour of libraries. And we had the ability to go into monasteries that had books that were literally 400 or 500 years old and open the books and flip through the pages and look at it. And it was just amazing. It was an amazing experience. But now being able to take and scan through these books and make the data that's in the book available to researchers and to the common public, the general public, not common public, the general public is just, I think this is going to open up a whole new layer of data to allow people to do historical studies and research. I think this is fascinating. I think this is amazing.
Right. And without damaging the book is really the key thing here, because just the exposure to additional oxygen for those books or improper handling could destroy them beyond all readability. And something like this could make it that much easier to avoid that circumstance.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Very, very cool.
Very cool.
Well, speaking of things that are old, that can have new life. There's a great link that we also found this week where somebody has taken an old Nintendo cartridge and put a Raspberry Pi in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so, I mean, it's really just making use of the shell.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's RetroPie, which I've installed on a couple of my Raspberry Pis and played with, which allows you to actually run a MAME emulator to run old Nintendo games.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have a Raspberry Pi inside of a Nintendo cartridge that allows you to play the original Nintendo game that was on that cartridge.
Right. And the key here, at least this particular one, is just using the cartridge as really a cover for the Raspberry Pi. So you're not putting the cartridge in a Nintendo DS or something and then playing all the games on it. You're using this as a way to have the Raspberry Pi serve up the games and connect it through the HDMI port to the TV. So very cool packaging, very cool concept and structure.
But remember the size of the Nintendo NES or the Nintendo machine that you had to have to plug that cartridge in to originally play the game.
No, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. So you're replacing the entire console with something that's just the size of a cartridge, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. Now, I never had a Nintendo and wasn't really big into Nintendo, but I just think, again, very cool example of kind of a hacker mentality doing some cool stuff.
2,000 games, $30.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Good game on investment, I would say, wouldn't you?
Yes.
All right. Well, there's one last piece that we had in our hit parade, our potpourri of our technology here.
Yes. And this is something that you and I will both love. The question is, do I have all the pieces to make it myself? and we've talked about on the show before how growing up, I had this big trunk full of Legos. And when I went to high school, my mom gave it away. When I went to college, my mom gave it away.
What are you going to do? She kills me.
Mom. Mm-hmm. So this is a great example of a project called Flybricks. It's a DIY company that sells these kits that allows you to build your own quad, hex, or octocopter out of Lego and create your own little I don't like calling these drones because they don't fly on their own.
No, it's a little helicopter.
It's a little quadricopter or octocopter, where you can put your
hexacopter, little
quintillion copter. if you buy enough kits, you can do it. Which allows you to then, you know, put this on there and run your Lego pieces and turn them into a little quadcopter, and it's really cool.
Yeah, the video itself is a lot of fun too, because Lego, when you crash your quad or hex or octocopter, tends to not retain its built form, and you get to build it all again, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, that's one way of calling it.
Yeah, something tells me I would be doing a lot of building if I had one.
You can rebuild it because you have to.
Stronger, faster, because you have to.
Because you have. So I'm thinking, maybe I ought to put this on my wish list. Because I've had a quadricopter on my wish list for years now, and you know, my family members haven't gotten the hint.
What are you gonna do, family members? If you're listening,
you know,
quadricopter,
quadcopter. But this is cool. Yeah, we'll check out the video. But we are getting really close to time. So, Michael, what have you been playing lately?
Well, you know, I've been continuing to play a little more of this Dungeon Boss thing because you kind of said, hey, this is a fun game.
So, and it's kind of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I mean, it is a game that has some of the crafting in it, which I know you like and which for me is really tedious.
Uh-huh.
And you know, but I'm having some fun with that, and I'm checking right now because I have one other thing that I hadn't talked to you about yet, but yes. I think you might find
something I will enjoy and will take Dungeon Boss off my machine.
Well, maybe not that. I have a game on here now called Super Phantom Cat, I guess, is the real name of it. And Super Phantom Cat is this little platform jumper kind of thing where you zoom around and you jump on things and you open, you know, stuff and you gain all kinds of fun benefits as you go through the various worlds and try to get 3 stars and everything. And I guess the neat thing about this super cat here is that your cat gets different abilities depending upon what the special ability that they happen to land on was. So like you start off with an ability to smash through bricks and stuff like that. So that is cool. And I've had a little bit of fun playing it. And then the little cat, if you just stand there and let it do itself, you know, just let it stand there by itself, the cat will eat a carrot because it's bored and waiting for you to do something.
Because that's something all cats like, is a carrot.
Yes. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Better than a mouse, I think.
No, I think it'd be better if it ripped the head off of a mouse and chomped it down. So yeah, I'm looking at screenshots from the game. So it's got that retro feel to it. It's got the endless scroll to the left and to the right for some perspective. It also looks up too. Yeah, I might have to play it.
Yeah, could be fun.
I'm not really good at those. I really have a hard time landing. You know, right on that edge of wherever the edge is that you need to land.
Yeah. Yeah, I have that problem here too. But you know, I love the carrot eating cats.
Carrot eating cats, yeah, that's important. Well, that's very cool. We want to thank everyone who's pointed interesting links to us this week. We love getting your feedback. We would really appreciate a favor if you would go out to iTunes or wherever you get the podcast and give us a ranking or a rating. Give us 5 stars. That would help us grow our audience some and get some more feedback to make it better for you.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't tell me what you're playing these days. There's probably something out there that I need to now also find, right?
No.
Nothing more.
I literally have not had any time to play much of anything this week. It's been a crazy busy week. I think I might have to do some Super Phantom Cat this weekend just to maybe open up a bottle of wine and see if I can jump on ledges.
Yeah. See, that'd be fun. You'd love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks, everybody. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.